We have a bit of a hybrid episode today on Journeys to Medicine. Synapse held a talk on identity at the end of the fall semester. While we're still setting up a time to record a few of the presenters from that talk, I've put together this episode, which also ties to identity. Today's episode features an eBoard member on putting yourself out there, the incoming Synapse president talking cadaver lab, and a surprise, hopefully a pleasant one, at the end. So join me, won't you, on Journeys to Medicine, Identity. Hayden Swackhammer pretty much always knew she wanted to be a physician. When we sat down to record, she noted that anatomy and how things work was always an interest. Now she gets ready to enter the clinical environment. Hayden reflected upon a time when she wasn't so sure of herself, and more importantly, what she learned from this experience in That Time I Tried A Cappella.
It was the fall of my first year in college. I had stars in my eyes, and I seemed to float everywhere I went. I made it. I lived on a beautiful campus where endless food was always available and was surrounded by some of the best people I have ever met. I could do anything. I could be anything. I was at orientation when I heard a cappella live for the first time. Those people could sing so well that I got goosebumps. I was inspired. I wanted to be a part of something so beautiful. I wanted to make music. For those of you who are not familiar with a cappella, it is music made solely by voices. No instruments, those parts are also sung. Just 8 to 15 talented singers performing whole songs by mouth. I come from a family that adores music, but no one is particularly musical. Music opportunities before college were chorus and orchestra, neither of which I was ever interested in joining. My peer mentor encouraged me to try out for an a cappella group. I am still not sure if he saw my desire and was encouraging me to follow my dreams, if he said it sarcastically, or if he just said it because he knew how much fun his best friend made it sound. I succeeded at everything I worked hard for up until this point, so why not? I didn't really consider that I had never done anything musical in my life past singing at church and playing the recorder in third grade. But I was passionate about this, so I had to try. My poor roommate endured my singing, which at this point had increased to a daily occurrence. No one bothered to ask if I knew anything about music. The notes, the tone, the tempo, the pitch. The week of tryouts finally came. I was less sure that I would make the group. Even if I did, would I really have time for it around my lacrosse schedule? By the afternoon of tryouts, I was beyond anxious. I was scared. Scared to sing in front of people, something I actually don't like to do. And I was scared to fail. I remembered a quote from one of those inspirational posters. What would you do if you weren't afraid? Well, I would go into tryouts, and I would embarrass myself just for the chance to be a part of something I found so beautiful. I entered the room, and it was me and 5 members of the group. There was a piano. Why was there a piano? I introduced myself with a giant grin. The girl sitting by the piano asked me to match pitch. I said I didn't know how to do that. She pressed a key and then mimicked the sound with her own voice. She matched the sound perfectly. It was my turn, matching pitch for the first time in my life. I could hear that my voice was making a different sound than the piano, but how did I make it sound the same? They were nice. They were so nice. They thanked me, and they asked me to sing next. My confidence shaking after unsuccessfully matching pitch, I announced the song that I would be singing, No Rain by Blind Melon. They didn't know it. How did they not know it? I sang the first bit of the song. My voice was trembling, as were my hands. Again, they smiled and thanked me and asked me to grab a donut. I grabbed a glazed donut and I left. I got outside, out of breath and out of pride. My jaw was tight and I felt like I was shivering, even though my body was still. I did it. I thought maybe if no one else tried out, they would let me in. But really, how could they? How could I sing with 12 other people in harmony if I couldn't match the pitch of a piano? About a week later, I got the surprisingly kind email with unsurprising news. They would not be accepting me into the a cappella group. I laughed. Of course they wouldn't. At first, it stung a little. I wasn't used to failing. But I was proud. I was scared, really scared, but I did it. I tried out for something that inspired me, something that I was really bad at. I didn't succeed, but I still got a donut out of it. This experience has followed me for almost 6 years. It reminds me to be confident and act even when I'm nervous. Nervous about getting something wrong, nervous about looking foolish, nervous about failing. I ask myself that famous quote, "What would you do if you weren't afraid?" I answer that and I act. I remind myself that I may embarrass myself, but it certainly won't be the first time, nor the last. I remind myself that I might as well embarrass myself while doing something I want to do, rather than miss out. So I encourage all of you, ask yourself what you want to do. Remove fear from the equation and go out and do what you love. Who knows? You might even get a donut.
I'm happy to announce that Synapse recently held elections for the 2023-2024 academic year, and Jordan Salvato has been elected club president. Jordan will be doing a lot of the behind-the-scenes work, deciding on themes and recruiting presenters for Season 2 of Journeys to Medicine. But for now, the Ivy League chicken salesman returns. See Episode 1 if you have no idea what I'm talking about. In Act 2 of our program, Jordan Salvato with Who Are You?
Is today the day? Do I really feel ready for this lab? Is that the smell of formaldehyde? Where did my group go? Is this our cadaver? Why does he look so young? Why does he look so peaceful? Would I ever be able to know the man that is before me? If I were to touch his skin, would I know what kind of man he was? If I am to run my fingers down his veins, would I know the hopes and dreams that he once had? If I am to hold his heart, would I know what kind of family he had? Will I ever be able to know the man that is before me? If we were to meet somewhere around the world in a small bar, would we engage in conversation or simply walk on by? What would we discuss if we were to talk? Would we talk about politics, the global state of affairs? Would we tell jokes? I wonder what kind of laugh he has. I wonder what kind of drink he would drink. And what would I say to the man that is before me when he asks me that dreaded question? Who are you? Well, how am I to answer that question? What kind of question even is that? Would I start by telling him my name? Would I tell him of my favorite meal, that it is spaghetti and meatballs because it reminds me of a simpler time? Would I tell him that I'm often afraid of speaking in public, so I flex my calves? Would I tell him that I often feel inadequate for the path that I walk? Would I be able to tell him of the sorrows that I've endured, of the loved ones that I've lost? Would I be able to tell him of the happiest times in my life? Could I describe to him the insurmountable joy that I felt when I called my father and told him I made it into medical school? Or would I simply just tell him my profession? So what would I say to the man that is before me when he asked me, "Who are you?"
Dr. McCoog here, totally winging the intro to this next piece. What I hope is a special treat is a story from me. I talked it over with the executive board and they asked me to do a story. Wasn't exactly sure which direction to take this in, but I've been working on a project over the last few months that I'm ready to share. So the big news is, I'm working on my first book. The topic of this book is finding leadership in everyday activities, but what makes it unique is that it's done through a series of short stories. You're about to find out what I mean. So please join me in our next story, Some Old Cardboard. Thurman Munson was the captain of the New York Yankees starting in 1976, the team's first since Lou Gehrig. A fan favorite, Munson was a 7-time All-Star who played 11 years with the Yankees. His life ended tragically in a plane crash at the age of 32. With all due respect to Thurman Munson's memory, he's a minor character in this story. One of my passions is baseball cards. I used to get in trouble as a kid because my allowance, and then some, went to the local card shop almost immediately after it reached my hand. I stopped collecting in high school, but got back into the hobby in my early 30s. My collection has a few really nice high-end cards, but a large portion of our basement is boxes of cards hardly worth the paper they're printed on. My wife asked me one day if I had any Thurman Munson cards. I responded with a perplexed, probably, why? She tolerates my collecting slash borderline obsession, but never really had much interest beyond seeing my childlike excitement when I acquired a sought-after card. She explained that a friend's husband, Dean, had cancer and wasn't doing well, and that Dean had sold his prized collection in the late 1970s to buy his wife an engagement ring. Thurman Munson was his favorite. She wanted to buy him a Thurman Munson card from me to give to him. I explained that Munson was a great player, but his stuff didn't really sell for big bucks beyond a high-grade rookie card. I dug through my boxes and came up with a few Munsons, and she gave them to her friend for Dean. A few days later, her friend reported that the cards really brightened his day, and she saw him get excited for the first time in a long time. So I did what anyone would do. I asked for their address. I dug up every Thurman Munson and older Yankee I could find. These weren't hard for me to part with, as I'm a Mets fan. Every week or so, I mailed Dean a couple of cards, sometimes including a letter wishing him well. Eventually, I sent a binder for him to keep his cards in. He expressed appreciation through his wife, and it made me feel good to be able to cheer up someone who was going through such a struggle. One day, Dean died. We never met in person or talked on the phone. He didn't write back because he wasn't able. I felt like a friend had passed. I was sad, but we knew this was the more than likely outcome. His wife continued to say that receiving cards was something he really looked forward to and enjoyed. This story was always something I was proud of, but I never got too emotional about the experience until one day when my students and I were discussing their community immersion projects. For this project, a pair of students partner with a community partner, usually someone who is living with a chronic illness or elderly people navigating their 70s or 80s. The discussion turned to end of life, and despite going through it with my dad, my mind turned to Dean and the Yankees cards. It hit me like a ton of bricks. It was the only time, so far, I couldn't hold back tears in class. And we talk about some heavy stuff on a weekly basis. The emotions weren't even so much that I realized I touched someone at the end of their life, as much as it was the realization that Dean had changed me forever. Good deeds were no longer something we talked to our kids about. They became something I had actually done. While I know this is a powerful story, and may have brought a tear to your eye, I also realize this is a book about finding leadership in everyday life. The message here is that you never know the extent of your compassion and influence. We often see on the news, read in the paper, or hear in a podcast, stories of perfect strangers helping others. The hero always says the same thing, "I did it because it was the right thing to do." I want the takeaway from this story to not just be that leaders help others, but that your help reaches far beyond what you realize. Dr. Robert Gates was my mentor. He taught me as a graduate student and took me under his wing when he was the dean of the graduate school at my alma mater. When I told Dr. Gates I was considering a doctorate, he encouraged me to not only do so because I was capable, but that I would touch the lives of so many more people if I became a professor. He said, "A high school teacher will work with maybe 100 students per year for 30 years. That's 3,000. If you train teachers for 30 years, and if even half of them have a 30-year teaching career, think of all the lives you've touched." That anecdote rings even truer for me now that I've been given the opportunity to train future physicians. The story started with a Thurman Munson card and ends with a greeting card. When my dissertation chair led me out of the room for my committee to discuss if I had successfully defended my dissertation, Dr. Gates was sitting in the hall waiting for me, congratulations card in hand. It would have been a total bummer had I not passed. I had invited him, but I didn't anticipate he would come. In fact, he was the only one there. My kids were too young. My mom was taking care of my dad, and I was divorced and unattached. But in retrospect, I wouldn't have had it any other way. The man who believed in me and started my journey was the one who was with me at the end of the path that was also the amazing beginning of another. Voices you hear on Journeys to Medicine are those of the members of the Synapse Medical Humanities and Storytelling Club at Geisinger Commonwealth School of Medicine in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Thank you to Hayden and Jordan, along with the rest of the Synapse Executive Board. And thank you to the leadership and my fellow faculty at GCSOM. I'm your producer and host, Dr. Ian McCoug. Join us next time for more Journeys to Medicine.